It's Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm Chris Carter with Ray Fittipaldo. We're going to get our reactions to the Steelers' full NFL draft class, leading with, are the Steelers actually going to come into the season and actually start guys that they drafted high? Not something they do every year, but it's something that people are wondering about. That and a lot more here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports, from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with one of our great Steelers beat writers, Ray Fittipaldo, and we are here breaking everything down about the reaction to the Steelers NFL draft class. You heard and saw us all weekend long with our live coverage with Ray and Jerry and Brian at the Steelers facility. Myself, I was at Mike's Beer Bar, which, by the way, sponsors this show. It's an amazing place, and big shout-out to Mike Sukich and the people at Mike's Beer Bar for being great hosts to us during our live stream, where myself, Adam Bittner, Jason Mackey, Joe Starkey, Paul Zeitz, and our Steelers team phoning in. We had a great team of people there. Also, shout out to Andrew Rush and Ryan Wynn for their contributions in keeping everything afloat there. It was an amazing weekend for the draft process. And again, at Mike's Beer Bar, we had over 500 different beers to choose from with over 20 televisions. So we could see the draft and all the NBA and NHL playoff action at the same time while enjoying amazing food and amazing beer there. More on that later. But Ray, now that we've had a time to kind of step away, there's a big question about this draft class. I think everyone's agreeing. We'll get to grades and stuff like that in a bit here. Everyone's kind of talking about, like, okay, we like the upside of this, but there's a legitimate question because of the Steelers' past and how they apply they use their rookies. Is this a year where we're going to see the top guys they drafted start right away, or at least very soon into the season? Because even last year, where everyone was excited about Broderick Jones and everyone was excited about Joey Porter Jr., neither of them started for weeks. Heck, it took like a month before Joey Porter Jr. It took half the season before Broderick Jones. Do you see that being a thing this year, or are especially Troy Faltano and Zach Frazier, are they going to be starters day one?
Yeah, listen, I wrote about this for our draft preview last week on Wednesday, Chris, and I think with the Steelers making their big moves this offseason, you know, the acquisition of Russell Wilson and, you know, signing Patrick Queen and filling all those holes in on defense. And then Art Rooney told Jerry Dulac, I think it was on Friday or Saturday, that, yeah, you know, we made those moves because there's a sense of urgency to win playoff games this year. And I don't think you can go another year, Chris, with Dan Moore as your left tackle. Obviously, you know, there was a big hole at center with no one really there to fill it in. So I think you're right. I think this might be the year. And we've seen this before with the Steelers. You know, Marquise Pouncey was a starter from day one. They've had some other guys who have done it. They've been special players, but I think this is a perfect opportunity for Troy Faltano, whether it's on the right or left side, to step in and be that guy early. And I think Zach Frazier too. Listen, there's going to be a competition, but I think this, you know, sooner rather than later with those guys, tons of college experience, completely different scenario than it was last year with Broderick Jones. I think Broderick only had, what, 16 starts or so in college?
Yeah.
Faltano has 30. Frazier, four-year starter, he's got to have up over 40, I think. So different scenarios. So, I think, you know, assuming everything goes well and there's no injuries that set them back, I think both those guys potentially can be day one starters once the season opener gets here in September.
And you brought up a good point with their experience. I don't think it's just because they don't have they don't have great starters, but I think it's these guys are people when you drafted them, you were looking at that from the jump anyways. It wasn't just because, you know, like if Mason Cole was still in Pittsburgh, I know that he probably gets some favor there, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Zach Frazier take his job if he was still in town, because Mason Cole was struggling that much. And I think if Zach Frazier, if he can simply snap the ball consistently, that'd have been something like useful. So, you know, that, and then like you said about Dan Moore Jr., look, they've tried to make Dan Moore Jr. a right tackle for so long. It would seem like malpractice to keep him in unless he balls out in training camp. Like if he comes into training, like I'm sure they'll give him a chance to compete, quote unquote, but right, like, unless he changes drastically in one summer compared to how we've seen him for the past 3 years.
Yep.
I would be shocked to see him beat out Broderick Jones at left tackle or Troy Faltanu at right tackle this year. I just think that both of those guys are ready to go. And if that's the case, Ray, like let's say Faltanu's at right tackle, Brock Jones is left tackle, left guard still Sayamalu, right guard still Daniels, and then your center is now Zach Frazier.
Yep.
That's kind of the offensive line that everyone was dreaming about going into the draft process. It's like, man, if you could just get one tackle and one center, and then you can move Broderick Jones over, and then you are cooking. If that's the case, let's say that is something that actually happens here. How soon do you think it would take for this offensive line to show like, oh, wait a minute, this is why they invested so much in this position?
I don't think it could take long. I mean, they've been one of the worst offensive lines in the league, really, probably going back to 2019. I think 2018 was okay. They had a good offense. And then 2019, things just started falling off. DeCastro and Pouncey retire after the 2020 season. And, you know, the old vets, Foster and all those guys, started stepping away from the game. So it's been a good 5 years since that's been the case. And, you know, I think with the moves that they've made, and I think it was smart to bring in Sayamalu last year to kind of be that vet in the room to set the culture for that room. But when you add first-round picks 2 years in a row and, you show a desire to get better, I think you got to let those guys play and, let them sort of find their own footing in the NFL. There's probably going to be some missteps along the way this season, but I don't see any reason why, say, by December or certainly by 2025, that this isn't one of the better lines in the AFC. There's a reason you invest that premium draft capital into that position. And, I just think you got to let those guys go out there and play and do their thing. I think it's kind of reminiscent of what they did in 2010, 2011, and 2012. Mm. When they got Pouncey and Gilbert and DeCastro 3 years in a row. So I'm not saying they're going to be as good as that line, but they're certainly trying to make that happen.
I mean, certainly that was a youth movement, right? And I remember even – I think it might have been Jerry that wrote the story. It's been so long. But, I remember Kevin Colbert saying something like, we're going to get this group to run like a pack of horses, talking about that group of Pouncey, Gilbert, and DeCastro. And I just remember, like, as a young Pittsburgher, like just being a person like watching, like, man, the offensive line's rough, like they're gonna need to invest in this. And I was like, well, we'll see if these guys get together. And then we saw before our very eyes with those three guys, and you add in, Ramon Foster, Calvin Beecham, Alejandro Villanueva, that whole crew, they became one of the best offensive lines for years in the NFL. Like, it was a real thing that they were dominant at the line of scrimmage. And that set a lot of great stages for Ben Roethlisberger to have some great years statistically and everything like that. And I'll even say, like, I think they kind of got cut short with that line with injuries. Marcus Gilbert was supposed to be a dominant offensive tackle for years. He had several injuries that ended his career very quick, very shortly, at the end of his rookie contract. And then everyone was hoping that Marquise Pouncey and David DeCastro at least kind of carried like one or two more years into the 2020s, but then both of them suffered, injuries that just kind of ended their careers. And the Steelers were kind of put in a place where, well, we're going to have to settle for what's out there until you finally get a chance to reload. Now, Omar Khan, Andy Weidel, Mike Tomlin, they have reloaded. This is a group with now three of those anchor players that we were talking about being on the offensive line, two really good veterans in Daniels and Sayamalu. And I'll even say Mason McCormick, the guard that they drafted in the fourth round, he is a road grader. Like, you look at his tape, he bullies people at the line of scrimmage. He's athletic. He had an amazing relative athletic score of 9.96. He's not going to start this year, but let's say the team can't re-sign James Daniels after this season because his contract's up. Maybe you got a future starter in McCormick, or let's say you do start re-sign James Daniels, but Isaac Sayamalu's gone the year after that. Then Mason McCormick has 2 years of being a backup to get ready for that, or you can go somewhere else. But point being, I think that they have set themselves up to potentially, as long as these guys don't get destroyed by injuries and they play out the way they're supposed to, this offensive line, they could have addressed it. And now after this year, they can start looking at fixing other positions on the roster.
Well, Chris, I mean, just look to last month. guards getting what, $15, $18, $20 million a year? I mean, NFL teams are paying guards now like they never have. So
exactly.
Even if you like James Daniels, and I'm not saying he's that type of player, but you might have to pay him $14 or $15 million a year. And I just think there's a point of diminishing returns when you start doing that. I think James Daniels is a good player, but I don't know if he's worth that kind of money. So, you know, I was a little bit, you know, scratching my head there Saturday when they made that McCormick pick, but it makes all the sense in the world now when you just look at your team building for 2025, right? And that's what this is all about too. They, you know, kind of approach the first day, plug and play guys, you know, for 2024 impact guys. And I think you saw it the second day with McCormick, you know, that's more of a future move and I'm okay with it. You know, they didn't get a D lineman or a corner early in the draft, but you know, I trust what Andy and Omar are doing here. It seems like they know what they want to do and they got a path moving forward.
Absolutely. I want to talk about grading the draft. And we're going to get this out of the way now. This isn't how these guys are going to pan out for their careers. This is more so about where we saw some of these players, at least, and how we valued them in this draft class versus where the Steelers got them. And we'll talk about the grades. Jerry Dulac released his grades. You'll get our grades along with those right here on the North Shore Drive podcast on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But first, I want to remind you, this show is sponsored by Mike's Beer Bar, an amazing place that definitely was great hosting us when we were there for the live stream of the NFL draft all weekend long. If you didn't get a chance to join us, you missed out. But don't miss out on Mike's Beer Bar. It's the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go there, it's right on North Shore, right across the street from PNC Park on Federal Street. You walk in, there's over 20 televisions. So if you're there for any sporting event, they'll get you ready. It's great. It's a great place to go before, during, after Pirates games, whether they're here or on the road. It's also got, they've always got 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap at all times. They're always switching new ones in and out. So whether you want an IPA, a stout, a Hefeweizen, a sour, they have so many different things that to work through. And they're starting to roll out more of their summer beers because it's getting nice outside. So definitely go to Mike's Beer Bar today for that. And also, you can try their amazing food. They have their amazing steak on a stone where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. You get to every time you cut off a piece, just press it into the stone and you choose how well done you want every single bite. And that's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to their menu. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today. When you get there, tell them Chris sent you. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let's get into grades, Ray. I even think Jerry kind of like sarcastically released his grades. If you looked at the way he posted them, he had a couple of like capital letters in the places that they weren't supposed to be. And I was like, I think Jerry's realized, like saying like, hey, I'm not saying that these guys are Hall of Famers, but we're going to acknowledge that like this draft, as far as how you've evaluated players going into the draft process, and now that you're out of it, getting the guys who you got, this is where we put a lot of these guys. I thought it was very interesting. Let's start with the first pick of the draft, and that's Troy Faltanu at 20th overall. Jerry gave the Steelers an A+. Are you as high as him? Because I'm giving them an A+. Troy Faltanu was my 14th best player in this draft class. So getting him at 20 at a position of need, in my opinion, that's a home run first pick as far as value and not trading up to get him.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. They stay pat and they were patient too. So yeah, I give it an A+. I think that guy is going to be, he's got the, what was the term that Pat Meyer used? I think tenacious.
Yeah.
So he's kind of got that, you know, what do the kids say today? Got that dog in him.
Yes.
And every offensive line needs players like that. So we all know what type of athlete he is. He's got the size. And when you add in that he's got that little bit of an edge to his game, I like it. So, yeah, I'll go A+ as well.
Zach Frazier is a guy also who I had very high on my board. I think I had him at my 29th best player, if I remember my big board. And so they got him at 51. That's another guy. Jerry's Dulac said a B+. And again, that's not a slight on it at all. So the B+ is a very good draft grade. But I'm willing to give that an A as well in my book, because in all the simulations and all the rankings that I was doing, I was like, man, I don't think there's any way how Zach Frazier falls to the Steelers, you know. But then we saw the running quarterbacks, we saw Jackson Powers Johnson fall into the second round. And then when the Raiders took Jackson Powers Johnson, I even tweeted out, I was like, hey, I think they might need to trade up to get him. And then got closer and closer, and then we were like, okay, will Zach Frazier fall to them? And then he naturally fell to them. The patience of Omar Khan, I think that's what makes Zach Frazier an A to me, because I didn't think there was any way they'd get him at 51, and somehow they got him.
Yeah, I'll give it a B, and I think a trait that they sought in this class was high character players. And if you remember what Frazier did at the end of that game against Baylor,
yep,
to get off the field, save his team a 10-second runoff penalty, they end up winning that game. In the grand scheme of things, you know, the West Virginia wasn't really playing for much that day, right? I mean, you know, they weren't in contention for any kind of a conference championship or anything like that. But, you know, that's the leadership of a four-year starter, a guy who cares about football, cares about his teammates. So I think he's going to be a solid pro. And I think when you get a high character player like that, who's going to step into the pivot and be making the calls and kind of being the quarterback of your offensive line, so to speak, I think it's good to have a player like that.
Absolutely. I do think that that's absolutely a part of this thing here. I mean, across the board, like you said, Zach Frazier, that moment was iconic, you know, for a lot of people. Like, I was there at the combine. I waited 2 hours to talk to Zach Frazier, but I was so glad I did. When I did, I was like, man, this guy's got a head on his shoulders. He's inspiring, and he's a very likable guy. And it seems like everything that I've read about him, seen about him, interacting with him, I'm like, this guy seems like he's going to be a nice, welcomed addition to this Steelers locker room, as is Troy Faltanu, and as is the next guy we're going to talk about, Roman Wilson. Everything I saw about Roman Wilson, I liked. I liked his ability to get separation. I liked his speed. You know, he's a little undersized. You know, you're going to probably put him in the slot, at least to start in the NFL. Jerry Dulac gave him a B. I'm going to give him a B as well here. I thought that, you know, while he's not going to be your guy that fixes everything in your wide receiver room, I think that, you know, there's still legitimate questions there. Actually, excuse me, Jerry gave him an A. So that's my apologies. Jerry gave him an A. I'll give him a B just because I don't think he's definitively the number two guy right away, but I think that he's a heck of an addition. And I really liked Roman Wilson. I forget where I put him on my big board. He was ahead of where – he was higher than where the Steelers picked him in my big board. What was your sense of Roman Wilson and how you graded out their getting him at 84th overall?
Yeah, I'll go B plus. I think. Did you notice, Chris, that the new receivers coach, Zach Azani? I'm sorry, I pronounced his name wrong, but he put out a tweet and he said culture setter. So that kind of, you know, what do they think of? Number one, what do they think of their current room and the personalities in that room? But probably more importantly, what do they think of Roman Wilson? They think very highly of him. In that realm. So, you know, not a lot of production at Michigan, probably having to do more with Michigan's ground and pound approach. I think it's a good pick. He's faster than I thought he was going to test at the combine. And he made contested catches in college. He made big plays. And when I look at his progression in college, you know, limited as a sophomore, getting better as a junior, and then boom, 12 touchdowns as a senior, you want to see those guys get better. So that's why I give it a B plus. I don't think he's ever going to be a number one, but he could be a really good number two, I think, in time.
Absolutely. And look, if Pickens develops into the number one guy and he's the number two, you got two young guns that you can work with at a key position right there. Let's move right into Peyton Wilson. Jerry and I aligned perfectly here. He had this as an A plus. I have this as an A plus. I loved Peyton Wilson's measurements. He's 6'3". He hits like a Mack truck. He runs a 4.43 40-yard dash. He has great change, you know, explosiveness grades. His relative athletic score was through the roof. This is a big, fast guy. He can cover tight ends. He can help against slot receivers, and he can come up and help against the run. The only knock on him is his injury history that he basically messed up his knees early in his college career. But he looked pretty good last year for NC State. I think this is a heck of a pick. You don't even need him to start because you got Patrick Queen and Landon Roberts, and you know we got to wait to see what happens with Cole Holcomb. But this to me is a big get at what is a future need for the Steelers and maybe a potential starter with Patrick Queen for many years.
Yeah, and listen, what better time to take a chance on a guy with an injury history than late in the third round, right? Right. I mean, if the Steelers don't pick him, he probably falls into the fourth round. I think they picked at 98, and there were only two more picks on day two. So yeah, this has the potential to be an A plus. I'll give it a B plus for now. You are a little bit worried about the injuries. Mm-hmm. And when you factor in, Chris, that inside linebacker is just a brutal position. You're putting your body in harm's way a lot, even in today's game where teams are passing it around. Just look at the, the friendly fire that caught Cole Holcomb last year, right? I mean, it's, there's a high injury rate in the NFL to begin with. But I think when you play a position like inside linebacker or running back, it skyrockets. So I like the pick too, but I'm a little bit more tempered just because of the injury history.
We'll go through these real quickly. We got to move on to our next segment here. But Mason McCormick got a B from Jerry. Logan Lee got a C+. Ryan Watts got a C. And that still left the Steelers draft overall as an A for Jerry. I kind of agree with these pick with these grades. Mason McCormick, I thought, is a B because, as we talked about, he's a road grader. Doesn't need to start, but in the fourth round, that's kind of where you want. Reminds me a lot of the Kevin Dotson pick, maybe not Kevin Dotson himself, but because he's a high-end athlete as far as his testing numbers and a guy who doesn't have to start because you have two established guards already. That's exactly kind of where they drafted Kevin Dotson in the fourth round doing that situation. Logan Lee, to me, is like an Isaiah Loudermilk replacement. If he doesn't work out, oh, well, you spent a sixth-round pick on him. If he does work out, it's Brett Kiesel all over again. And then Ryan Watts, another prototype long cornerback that fits that slot. Now, granted, no slot cornerback options, and we'll get to that in the next segment, but I thought these were all solid, like, late-round picks that if they develop, great. If they don't, oh, well.
And listen, McCormick, like we talked about at the start, he could be a starter as early as 2025 if he does develop. So, yeah, you're looking for depth and special teams on day three, and I think they did a good job finding those types of guys.
Absolutely. I want to talk more about one of the positions the Steelers didn't get, and that was the slot cornerback spot. But our partner, our colleague, Jerry Dulac, with an exclusive report that the Steelers talked to a former slot cornerback who was recently in the news for not great reasons, but we'll talk more on that here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. Stick with us. We have still got a lot to discuss. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, as I alluded to in the last segment, the Steelers, Jerry Dulac reported, Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan met with former cornerback, Steelers cornerback, Cameron Sutton recently, which is very interesting because Cameron Sutton, as we all know, was a 7-year cornerback for the Steelers. He was there. He was a leader in a lot of cases. He was a veteran who set the tone in the secondary for years, grew up. Kind of came up under Joe Hayden and then developed into a guy they consistently relied upon. Then before last season, signed away with the Detroit Lions in free agency. And everyone was like, man, missed out on a starting corner, forced the Steelers to go get one Patrick Peterson this year, and didn't have like a great year with Detroit, but he was part of the team that, went to the NFC Championship game. So, he had everything lined up, but then we saw the reports of, I remember I was sitting covering a March Madness game courtside, and I saw the report go out that Cam Sutton has been released and he's been eluding the police for weeks for domestic violence charges. And so I'm like, that's the last person, last former Steeler I thought would get in trouble for anything, because we talked to Cameron Sutton for years, never got any of those type of vibes of what's going on there. And since then, we'll say the charges have been reduced. They're not felony charges. They're misdemeanor charges. They are not gone, though. And because they're not gone, it does not mean that Cameron Sutton is still free of any punishment. He could still face jail time technically with the charges. He can also face a suspension potentially from the NFL, because they could still launch their own investigation and determine what needs to happen here. But with Jerry saying the Steelers met with Cameron Sutton, it doesn't mean that they're definitely signing him. Probably means they're trying to figure out, just like the rest of us, what the heck happened here. Great. Do you see a real future where Cameron Sutton does make a return to the Steelers, or was this just they're checking in on a guy that they were pretty close with for many years?
Well, it certainly does make sense when you realize they didn't pick a corner until the sixth round in this draft, right? Their final pick. And there's some discussion about Ryan Watts, transitioning to safety just because he doesn't really, have the athleticism or the long speed to play corner in the NFL. So, I think there's legs to that report. you know, I think the Steelers are going to want to be cautious here. They're going to want to do their homework because the last thing they want to do is invest money in a player who's maybe going to be suspended for 2, 4, 6 games. I mean, we don't really know how that's going to play out. Listen, if the charges go from reduced to dropped, then, you know, the chances would likely even go up that, that he wouldn't be suspended. So I think we'll be in a waiting game here. I think there'll be some clarity probably by, you know, June or July. I think usually the NFL wants to get those things cleared up. So teams have an idea of what they're facing if they do sign a player. So I don't think it's going to happen this week or next week, but you look at the way the draft, the Steelers approach the draft. I think, you know, when you add 2 and 2 here, you might not get 4, but it's, you know, it's painting a pretty good picture that, you know, what their plans are, whether it's for Cam Sutton or maybe Patrick Peterson, who also remains a free agent.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is there are other options here. Shannon Sullivan still floating out there, right, in free agency. And again, like, I think the Steelers are in a position where, you know, we saw them free up cap space by, you know, restructuring Alex Highsmith's deal. But like we said, that did not mean that the Steelers were going to just go ahead and trade for Brandon Ayuk or make some crazy deal in the middle of the draft. I think they're still going to try and wait to get the best value situation for them. And like you said, we got to see what happened with this Cameron Sutton case. Like, who knows? Maybe he's innocent. I don't know. But reading the affidavit looked like something happened there. And so the Steelers, on top of the considerations that he might be suspended for X amount of weeks to start the season, the Steelers have to consider, like, you know, hey, like, do you want also to send the message that you're okay with that, bringing that back into your organization when that's something that, you know, happened, if it did happen? All those are something to talk about. But Patrick Peterson also, like you said, he developed into a sort of versatile, you know, defensive back for them last year. Obviously not a guy who can just line up on the outside anymore because he's just up there in his age. And then Shannon Sullivan, another guy there. And there's also, like, you know, just a chance going and getting someone else that maybe we haven't heard. Like when the Steelers let go of Mike Hilton, no one in Pittsburgh knew who Arthur Maulet was. And he had like some decent times with the Steelers, then went on and helped the Ravens last year after the Steelers didn't re-sign him. So I wouldn't be shocked if we just saw a name get signed at slot cornerback that we're not familiar with. But the idea of Cameron Sutton is certainly enticing, especially because he knows your secondary. He knows everyone there. They know him, like Terrell Austin, defensive coordinator. He coached him as a defensive back coach before he became coordinator. So yep, there's a lot of reasons that would line up. But again, I think for this to happen, Cam Sutton doesn't just need those charges to just be reduced as they have. I think he needs them to go. I think he needs them to be dropped entirely. And I'm not sure that happens.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, we'll see where it goes. You know, Chris, I always bring this up. It's not uncommon to go into a training camp with a position that's unanswered. They've done it plenty of times in the past. They did it just last season with inside linebacker and Quan Alexander. I can remember, was it 2015? They traded for Brandon Boykin like 2 weeks into training camp. He ended up being your slot for most of that year. So, you know, we're sitting here now talking about slot corner like it's a starting position, and it is. So was inside linebacker this year. It's just that sometimes they have targeted free agents they're having dialogues with, and you know, it just takes a little bit of time for these things to get done. So you know, they'll have their starting 11 on both sides of the ball by the time training camp gets here, but you know, it might not be by OTAs and you know, a lot of times, Chris, OTAs, it's for the young guys. They want to see what the young guys can do. If they don't perform or they don't like what they see, then they go out and they aggressively recruit guys and try to sign them. So that's kind of what spring football is all about. Summer football is a completely different animal.
Absolutely. There's a lot to still talk about this draft class on. We'll be breaking things down here more on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Ray, thanks for joining us, and thank you all for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Remember to subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to the channel to get all of our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast and our daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh sports writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. From Chris Carter and Ray Fittipato, thanks for tuning in. We're back Wednesday with another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.